Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here it is, the 8th day of April, 2014. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find Entree to the Chat Room. That is where you will find the brand new media player. That's where you'll find a broad selection of news stories for your consideration on any given day. And it's also where you'll find the PayPal address. Thank you very kindly overnight to Kevin and to Margaret. And thank you, Margaret, who helped us make up last night's fundraising shortfall and took us up to only $75 away from finishing off. You know, we're trying to double up fundraising this week because of next week's D.C. trip. So that means, thanks to Margaret, we have only, let's see, $375 we need to raise this evening, which is manifestly assisted by Darlene. Darlene sent a note saying, given the circumstances, I'd like to put out a Titanic Tuesday challenge. So it is on the table, and Darlene will double your money. If you contribute five, Darlene will match it, and it'll turn into ten. So that's a great way to get things going so that we can have all as many bills paid as possible before we bug out of here for Washington, D.C. next week. And what I hope will be a week of uneventful broadcasting. Emphasis on the word hope. Now, I do know that Monday evening we will be with family at a celebratory dinner for the life well spent of my uncle. And with that, so there will be no more on Monday. And no program on Friday, but I hope the rest of the week following that will just be absolutely uneventful. Okie doke, yeah. So that's where we stand. We've got a $100 challenge for Titanic Tuesday on the table from Darlene. Thank you very much, Darlene, and hopefully we can, between Darlene's challenge and your contributions, hopefully we'll work toward the $375 and start prayer meeting Wednesday at a nice, healthy, even zero. Thank you again, Darlene, and thank you one and all who keep all of this going. Okay, so it's Titanic Tuesday. And I sat down to do, part of it involves going through and posting stories to the Horn website for your consideration. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Titanic Tuesday wrote itself and may have even gotten its first ever poster child. We may have the official Titanic Tuesday. I don't know. We may have to extend it to more and Monday, too. Although if I ever get around to it, John Fox and I have talked for years about coming up with a parody of Manic Monday that would be just another Moran Monday. But anyway, no. And by the way, just so you'll know, I have already sent an internet out to our buddy Scott in Sweden telling him do not listen to this Titanic Tuesday broadcast until he's done with March Madness somewhere up in August. He's watching one game at a time and enjoying every one of them, I understand. So with that, we're full service here. We try to make sure that we meet, that, you know, we don't have any spoilers or anything like that. So Scott, you know, again, we are now 5 minutes into the program, turn off the podcast. Turn off the podcast, Scott. Scott, turn off the podcast. With that having been said, this. Just this.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP champs.
Yeah, they are. I didn't even know the NAACP was running a league, and if they had been, and considering that was Fox, I figured that the new Black Panther Party would have been the national champs, but no. And you can't just play that once.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
Yes, they are. All these years, we've been wondering whatever happened to her.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have that, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Yeah. No, that's not really her. I mean, that's really Miss Teen South Carolina 2007. It really is. But this isn't.
UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
You know what? I'm just going to stop the show right now and quit. I can't touch that. But I mean, we're done. The definition of Titanic Tuesday being, of course, displays of the Titanic that is to be found in the weirdo right wing of the United States of America. And there it is. Behold the coelacanth. Yeah. There was a legend going around once upon a time when I started in radio. Oh, dear. Wait a minute. I hope we haven't hurt Asa. This is good news for me, Bob. Now I can go up here and watch some games in person. Asa says from Vancouver. Sweet Jesus. Just, you know, remain vertical, Asa. Remain vertical. No, as I was saying, there was a legend that was going around back when I started in radio at We Barely Talk Good. And it concerned a DJ at another radio station who had found Jesus and went on to become, I guess, the program director of the station where I worked. But he had been so far into the depths of his own particular hang-ups, addictions, and misbehaviors and whatnot that when he was running the midnight shift one night, I guess he had a pitcher of martinis next to him or something and was getting loaded on the air. And decided to play Stairway to Heaven like 6 or 7 times in a row. And would just pick the needle up off. No martinis or even tequila bottles involved here. But I'm kind of that way. Oh, what is her name? Let her name live in the annals of Fox glory, Radio TV Rwanda. Heather Childers. Perky, blonde, earnest, upbeat, and can't tell the difference between the NAACP and the NCAA. Really? No. Even without the pitcher of martinis, let's do this again.
The UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
I mean, Fox reports, you decide. Maybe they are. I can't resist a little bit of sort of amateur psychoanalysis in moments like this. I mean, there she is, perky and bubbly and smiling and blonde and just white. And assuming, I don't know, that she watched the game or the human mind is a curious amalgam of neurons firing in a million different directions at one time. And she saw a bunch of dark-skinned young men, five on one side, five on the other. Well, okay, five on one side, occasionally four on the other, running up and down the basketball court. And the goddess of irony reached down from her lofty perch atop the giant whoopee cushion at the pinnacle, the apex of Olympus, and touched Heather Childers. It's a miracle.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
I can't get enough of that. We may have to play this 30 or 40 more times over the course of the evening. It's magnificent in its simple display of everything we always knew and occasionally suspected about radio, TV. Okay, we have apparently hurt Darlene. There's Darlene. Kindly goes out there and sets up the Titanic Tuesday Challenge and NAACP versus NCAA. Oh, my God, that's hysterical. I posted the story over at headonradionetwork.com, so if you want to go and save the clip for yourself or just bookmark it any time. Any time that the world is pressing in, any time that you're feeling all Wordsworthian and the world is too much with you, getting and spending, go to the bookmark. Just go to the bookmark. Refresh the video. And know that life is good.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
I played that for the family. And this is an old house. Some might even say rickety. I think I sensed the walls shaking, the windows rattling. The laughter was unstoppable. Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for happy ever aftering, where Heather Childers declared the UConn Huskies to be the 2014 NAACP national champions. Oh, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you. Because you just know in the back of her mind, she's got her own little loop running of Cleavon Little asking, where do white women at? This is everything you ever wanted to know about Fox News Radio Rwanda in
8 glorious seconds.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP National Champs.
Oh, ah, goodness. I've been tamping that one down. The 2014 NAACP National Champs. Because a basketball tournament is a terrible thing to waste. Can't stop. Oh, this is why I'll never have a job in professional broadcasting. Oh. Oh. Well, it happens to the best of us. Just one more.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP National Champs.
Now, to be fair, apparently the laughter broke out in the control room, too, because by the time she got a little further into the story, somebody had, probably in a voice much like this, oh, Heather! Heather! It's NCAA, not NAACP! Oh! You know who would have been especially pissed off at losing to the, he would have been okay with not being the NAACP national champs. Adolph Rupp of Kentucky. Yeah. Okay, I'm finally going to do it. Let's just play the whole darn clip.
Well, the UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP National Champs.
For the UConn Championship, the Huskies once again are in basketball heaven.
NCAA Champs, the Huskies celebrating as they took down the Kentucky Wildcats on the way to their second championship in 4 years. And here's how it all went down. Shabazz Napier and UConn, they were just too much to handle for the young Kentucky team. Napier would finish with 22 points on his way to being named most outstanding player. The Huskies taking the title with a final score, 60-54.
Four people are now behind bars after a mob brutally attacked a Detroit man who...
What? Hmm? Is that an added bonus to this little clip? Did you notice the emphasis that Heather Childers gave to NCAA the second time around? Yeah, kind of hard to miss. But that's barely the beginning. That is barely the beginning for this Titanic Tuesday. Barely the beginning. Shorty in L.A. NAACP. Damn, Bob, you are so late. Even I knew that's the Negro African American Colored People's Basketball Program. Oh! I can't help it. Can't help it. So there's that. And because this one ran past us yesterday, we were so chock-a-block with morons, especially the National Reviewer D. Williamson, who apparently hallucinates 50 cases. Now, I think there's a reference in there. It's like 50 cases of Pepsi in a single shopping cart. Did y'all go and read that finally? It's stunning, just stunning. But no, he occupied a good deal of our time on Moran Monday, and I think deservedly so. But because of the amount of time that was dedicated to Kevin D. Williamson Moran, we missed out on a Moran, and I had mentioned it in the run up to yesterday's program, and it fits nicely into Titanic Tuesday too. We missed. And I even made mention of the obligatory Star Trek reference. I don't think we've ever had a Star Trek Moran before, or a Star Trek Titanic intellect. There is a new, and apparently the when you take people like Don Blankenship into effect, There's a more fluid definition of the meaning of documentary, because there's a new documentary out produced by a goober named Robert Sungenis. Sungenis, S-U-N-G-E-N-I-S, called The Principal. And that's not P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L. It's P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E, The Principal. Holy mackerel. And the narrator is Kate Mulgrew, who once played Captain Catherine Janeway in Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek Nemesis. And it even features a number of scientists who got hornswoggled into participating in this thing. Michio Kaku, Lawrence Krauss, Max Tegmert. They apparently are engaged in the film and discussing the unique characteristics of this here planet that make it suitable for life. I don't know. I kind of doubt the film goes into a discussion of the things that human beings are doing. The Koch brothers, the various one percenters, are doing hand over fist to make it unsuitable for human life, but never mind. Because Robert Sungenis probably doesn't... he doesn't believe in that either. Robert Sungenis is an anti-Semite. He is a Holocaust denier. He has argued that no one has proven, well, where are they, that 6 million Jews died during the Holocaust. He also periodically argues that Jews can conspire with Satan to rule the world. Somebody blow the dust off the protocols of the learned protocols of the elders of Zion. That thing's still got legs. Oh my God. But no. Kate Mulgrew, who apparently needed the work, don't know. She is now claiming, yeah, that's exactly what it was. She needed to work. Kate Mulgrew says that she was simply a voice for hire. Because if you hoped to have any sort of, be treated with any sort of seriousness in the world, and you realized what you had done here, you'd run away from it too. Why? Because duct tape, tennis ball. Because the principle is all about how, no, really, the sun revolves around the earth. Geocentrism. Let's check out the trailer.
Everything we think we know about our universe is wrong.
There is a crisis in cosmology.
This is the moment of truth.
All these things are rather strange, and we don't know why they're occurring right now.
We are in a special place. I do believe that the universe was created by God.
It's an exciting time for cosmology because everything has changed.
If our Earth really turns out to be special, then I would say God made a mistake.
The universe is going to eventually run out of energy and all life will die. The future looks very bleak.
It's a strange time in cosmology because we don't understand nothing.
Whole universes could come from nothing.
Whoa, what is going on here?
It turns out nothing is almost everything.
Dark energy, as we call it, is the greatest mystery in all of creation.
Science has said you must stay over in this category here and you cannot go into the God category because that's going to destroy our science.
We have to ask Mother Nature, how do you work?
There's a shelf full of Nobel Prizes for the physicists who can unlock the secrets of dark matter.
You can go on some websites of NASA and see that they've started to take down stuff that might hint to a geocentric universe.
We may be very special, but that doesn't mean the universe was created just for us.
This idea that we're not in any special place in the universe, there's something wrong with that.
So they sent out this satellite and they find out these temperature disturbances throughout the universe were all pointing to the Earth.
When I see how barren the other planets are and how bountiful the Earth is, something's different and we're in just the right spot.
We seem to find ourselves in a part of the universe that is perfectly tuned for life.
Life is extremely rare, and that we are in fact the only life in our entire universe. Now I actually think we're very significant.
The Earth is a very special place. No two ways about it.
Oh, dear God. So, consequently, Kate Mulgrew, once word got out that she had participated in a documentary that argues that the sun revolves around the Earth, and so do all the other planets and near planets and maybe planets, and, well, hell, everything revolves around the Earth. Kate Mulgrew said, "I'm not a geocentrist, nor am I in any way a proponent of geocentrism. More importantly, I do not subscribe to anything Robert Sungenis has written regarding science and history, and had I known of his involvement, would most certainly have avoided this documentary. I was a voice for hire, and a misinformed one at that." Sungenis also runs a blog called, no, really, don't spit out the tennis ball yet, called Galileo Was Wrong. Of course, the only problem with Galileo being wrong is Copernicus was wrong, Fraunhofer was wrong, Einstein was wrong, Newton was wrong, Kepler was wrong, Stephen Hawking, wrong. Everybody's, and really, how typical is it of a right-winger that everybody is wrong but them? I wonder how these cosmologists and physicists and astrophysicists feel about being in a movie where the argument is made that the sun revolves around the Earth. Is that given the Don Blankenship thingy and this thingy? I hate to call them documentaries because they're not. They're fantasies. They're paranoid maunderings. Weird manifestations of weirdness. Given that we now have two documentaries where people participating in it were apparently hoodooed into participating, is this the new trend in filmmaking in right-wing circles? where you just show up and you lie, and that way you get yourself a celebrity or two, or a world-recognized astrophysicist or a couple to come in and play in your bizarre right-wing fantasy land? Oh, dear, oh, dear. Did you notice that one quote from him? Well, he's the guy who has all the answers. And everybody else is wrong. Isn't that just dawdling? Yeah. Great googly moogly. Yeah, okay. Well, Marty letting me know that... Lawrence Krauss is pissed that he's being taken out of context for principle. Well, pay attention next time, Larry. And maybe hire a lawyer for this one. Marty also pointing out, geocentrism. Think the religious industrial complex will be buying out theaters and giving tickets away? That's generally how it works. Kevin with a query. Isn't the everybody wrong but us slogan one of the right wing's first rules of acceptance into becoming a right winger? It's kind of like a cult, don't you agree? I do agree, Kevin, I do. Irish Dave. So that would that be meaning the big old book is the doctrine? Only be one, you know. There can be only one. Oh, dear. Bob, I've got a documentary, scare quotes, that proves that the Earth is flat. It's called In Search of the Edge. If you just watch it without a thought in your head, it all makes sense. If you question it, it's a load of dingo's kidneys. I'll bet it is. And I'm going to hang on to dingo's kidneys like, junkyard dog with an old bone. It's a load of dingo's kidneys. As I mentioned before, YouTube is full of these loonies, says Robert. The moon landings never happened. The moon is a hologram. Lizard people walk among us. And the Earth is the center of the universe, people. Robert continues, I weep for the future sometimes. Oh, weep? Weep? A ball. Then again, occasionally, people like Heather Childers getting for static joy. Dr. John pointing out, I never thought much of Captain Janeway. I call shenanigans on her. It was just a job claim. Her wiki bio has some insight. Quote, Mulgrew is also an opponent of abortion and capital punishment. She received an award from Feminists for Life, a pro-life feminist group, which, you know, I will note editorially is an oxymoron. She is quoted as saying, execution as punishment is barbaric and unnecessary, okay, but then, life is sacred to me on all levels and abortion does not compute with my philosophy. On the aggregate, Dr. John continues, I get the idea of opposition to abortion and the death penalty. At least it's consistent. But there's a huge difference here. You cannot separate being anti-abortion from being anti-woman. Anti-abortion equals compulsory pregnancy. Outside of a narrow range of tragic medical issues, nobody has to have an abortion. So-called pro-life feminism is a front for a right-wing definition of feminism that divorces politics from the social. Which... Once someone has been shown to be doing that, well, the whole legitimacy thing kind of falls apart, doesn't it, Dr. John? No, we had a little bout of buffering a couple of minutes ago, Marty. Sorry about that. Don't know what causes it. Sometimes I think it's just a whole bunch of people jumping onto the stream server at the same time. In which case, if that is the case, A reminder here at 24 minutes before the hour that Darlene has kindly put up a $100 challenge to help us get to our fundraising goal by the end of the program Thursday, at which point we will be able to pay the bills that we would be paying ordinarily during the coming week when we will be in D.C. and hopefully putting out programs every evening, although the equipment issues are the equipment issues are the equipment issues, so you know, take that into account. Oh, goodness me. And so far, no takers on that, by the way. Remember, 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 80, up to $100 that Darlene is willing to match this evening. Oh, let's see. This one has an avowedly, admittedly, what should we call it? Visual quality. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that it stems from a video, which, as we all know, talking about video on the radio is like dancing about architecture, but we will battle through somehow. You remember Foster Freese? From back in the 2012 presidential, Republican presidential pageants, you might recall that Dr. Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, had himself, Sheldon Adelson, to pump millions and millions of dollars into his goofy-ass pageant campaign. And it was Rick Plays with Dead Fetuses Santorum who corralled Foster Freese. Foster Freese being a mega millionaire who funds all manner of weirdness, you know, things like geocentrism and evolution is a lie and gotta save the snowflake babies and all of that silly crap. Among other things, Foster Freese says of his wealth, that God is the chairman of my board. And he gives all the glory to God for being him being all rich and everything. Because remember, it, within the lexicon and dogma and doctrine of neo-Calvinism, being made extremely wealthy proves that one is of the elect and therefore among the beloveds of the almighty, all-loving, all-powerful creator of the universe. It was, in fact, Foster Freese, back during the 2012 Republican presidential pageants, who, when talking to Mrs. Alan Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell, about contraception, which remains the Supreme Court's into religious entities in the United States, it was Foster Freese talk reception dear God, do I have to remember this? I do. Yeah, talking to Andrea Mitchell, Foster Freese, millionaire, billionaire, whatever he is, asshat, said, "And this contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive, you know. Back in my days, they used Bayer aspirin for contraception. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly. No, that means that the women put it between their knees, and that way they can't spread their legs and be all slutty and get pregnant unless Jesus wants them to. See, it was a joke. It was a joke. Understand? A joke. And you put the aspirin between the knees. Still don't get it. Yeah. Well, Foster Freese has apparently found the YouTubes. And that's never a good sign. Let's see. We are having some big buffering issues. Stand by. Apparently, the tune-in signal completely disappeared. Anyway, Foster Freese. And, on nights like this, just don't put the tennis ball and the duct tape away. Keep it handy. It's your friend. A number of these things in which, you're familiar, and it's a brilliant film. It's a German film from earlier in this, in the first decade of this century. I think the name in German is Der Untergang, which translated to the English means the downfall. A brilliant actor by the name of Bruno Adolf Hitler. Remember last night's story about the fundy that's out there screaming about the Obama army of gay male super soldiers? No, the Nazi army of gay hatred of white people aspires, camps because of it. Yeah, you were. So do I. So this clip from the movie Downfall has been used in various forms. It started out, I believe, with some gamers pissed off about Microsoft's flight simulator or something, and worked. One of the funnier ones was Hitler finds out that Michael Jackson is dead, and they're all the same clip, and they all have the same dialogue, and the humor part of it, it could get put in as being translations of what's being said in German. Well, Foster Freese has found the same clip. This apparently this was first done in 2006, and it's really sort of run its course. At one point in time, the producers of the film said, "Will you please stop doing this? This was a serious film with serious content. And you're really unparty, and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and the igamfoos and the John Birchers and the libertarians have a Hitler fixation that will not quit." Well, sort of in the way that this is the, I think, will go down in history as the moment in Fox News, Radio TV, Rwanda, latent racism.
Well, the Yukon Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
Right. Well, this occupies its own sort of philosophical space. Oh, by the way, before we go to the clip, thank you very much to Dan, who has answered fully half of Darlene's Titanic Tuesday Challenge. Thank you, Dan. That means we've only got $50 to go in order for Darlene to double everybody's money up to $100. And there it went. Try it again. Let me get a message to Ben real quick. All right. Let's go back. All right. So I was in the middle of the setup there and got diverted off to listen to Heather Childress declare the UConn Huskies the 2014 NAACP national champions because, well, why wouldn't you? Anyway, Der Untergang, it ain't funny anymore. It stopped being funny with the Michael Jackson clip or somewhere thereabouts, which was funny. But Foster Freeze, who gives all the glory to God, no, really, Foster Freeze has recently discovered the downfall gag. And, of course, guess what it's about? Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, you know, because Obama's Hitler. There's only one problem with this thing, and that is, and this is you know, just delightful, a delightful exercise in Titanic intellect that goes to prove that Foster Freeze, like so many wealthy, uber-wealthy people in this country, you know, extreme wealth is not an indication of extreme intelligence. It's an indication of extreme avarice, of a profound and almost religious fascination with money. Okay, maybe not even almost, just a religious fascination with money. And because apparently Foster Freeze is extremely wealthy but not extremely intelligent, well, let's go to the video, shall we? I'll keep the German audio low and just read off idols. Is that okay? So they're talking. So his aides are talking to Hitler and. And he says, after your lunch with Jarrett, you have several appointments. There's a ribbon cutting at a new Volkswagen dealership. He points to a map. And a book signing for your new cookbook, which must end by 3 o'clock. So you can make it to your 3:30 prostate screening with Dr. Feingold. Okay, do you see the set? You get the setup here? Yeah, this is precious. No, it's stupid. So Hitler is in the role of a person needing health care. And he's got a prostate time in 1945.
Mr. Feind bis zur Linie Lichtenberg, Marsdorf, Karlshorst gelangt.
Hitler responds. I don't want a Jew like Feingold poking around my bum. Just make an appointment with Dr. Steiner. Then comes the bad news.
Mein Führer, Steiner konnte nicht genügend Kräfte.
Dr. Steiner is not in the physician network for your new Obamacare bronze plan. Oh, this is bad. The Führer is going to have a hissy. And see, this is made doubly offensive because if you watch the film, and I recommend the film, Der Untergang, The Downfall, The Final Days of Adolf Hitler, brilliantly acted on all accounts. And you see this man finally reaching the end of his tether. And this is the moment that Foster Freese, because he thinks the young kids lack it, and therefore, you know, we can make them hate having health care because, you know, they're young and whatever. So here it comes.
Es bleiben im Raum Keitel, Jodl, Krebs.
Everyone who has decided to blow off healthcare.gov and just pay the fine and roll the dice, leave the room. Now, this is one of those moments where we find out how unintelligent Foster Freese is. Because, once again, this is a movie about Nazis. So, having decided to pay the fine and roll the dice, a bunch of Nazis leave the room. And, of course, a whole lot of the people who are deciding to pay the fine and roll the dice, well, they're the modern equivalent of, well, you know, I mean, they're birthers and deathers and tenthers and birchers and booger eaters and Republicans and libertarians and igamfoos and Nazis. So there go all the Nazis. Okay, and here comes the hissing.
That's why I've been saying.
It was a promise. Obama friggin' promised. He said if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Oh, they just love that part. And that proves that Obama is a liar. You know, the biggest liar in the White House has ever seen. I mean, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and all them other liars, they just pale by comparison. Benghazi! If you like your plan, you can keep your doctor. Period. He said period. That means no stinking conditions. But I, like millions of others, received a cancellation letter. No, really. Foster Freese, American right-wing patriot, funder of Rick Santorum, fetus fondler, has compared people who, after the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, to Hitler. Were you, Foster, buddy, I know you got more dollars than cents, but did you happen to miss out on that day of How to Win Friends and Influence People class? Yeah, you did, I thought so. I received a cancellation letter. All those policies weren't compliant with the Obamacare requirements. But they were supposed to be grandfathered. But not if there were changes to the policy. They changed them all the time. Premiums and deductibles change annually. But he had Sebelius set up the rules so they couldn't comply. And premiums and deductibles aren't going down, they're higher. I had Reich Care's first soldier of the German Reich plan. It rocked. I'm going to use a phrase like it rocked because, remember, we're trying to get through to the young hep cats out there. You know, listening to their swinging hep cat jazzy hip hop music stuff. Now all I can afford is Obamacare bronze level with a 40% deductible. If only the National Socialist German Workers' Party was considered a labor union. Really? Yeah, he's working in the labor unions here. Instead of a political party, we'd be set. The unions have all gotten waivers from Obamacare. Notice that labor unions occurs in the actual mention in the German of Stalin. We kind of had another incident. Yeah, we've been. They can keep their Cadillac plans. Now Obama has even apologized to people in this situation. He says he's sorry. Such a big man to say he's sorry. Well, sorry won't get my doctor or my plan back. Dr. Steiner has been my primary physician for years, decades. He already knows my whole medical history, but Obama ruined all that. Now I have to start from scratch with Dr. Feingold and get my exams from him, too? They don't call him Fat Fingers Feingold for nothing. At which point a woman outside in the hall looks to another young matron out in the hall and says, he doesn't know you're dating Fat Fingers. I'm Feingold, Sandra. I've even heard that in 2015, when Obama's delay ends and employers' plans must comply, then there will be even more cancellations. Obama lied. Obama now has a growing integrity gap. His poll numbers are plummeting. There's no way we can pin this one on Bush. So let's blame Ted Cruz. Thanks, Foster Freese. God, you may be a billionaire, but you are dumber than a bucket of shit. I mean, I kind of agree with him. I think he and his right-wing cronies probably do have a rather right-wing fascist streak. In that sense, it's good of him to admit it. But all that money, and he didn't have one administrative assistant who would look at him and say, "Hey, boss, Mr. Freese, my lord and master, I don't think you want to do this." Because you're not comparing Obama to Hitler, you're comparing people who oppose the Affordable Care Act to Hitler. And of course, it's classic that because remember, these are not, I mean, you know, these aren't the German words. Those of you who are familiar with the language know what's going on there, what's being said, what's being described. This is all reliant upon this being funny, which it, oddly enough, isn't. I don't want a Jew like Feingold poking around my bum, because that's a real knee slap. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Wait a minute. Bob, didn't you keeping your bullshit policy? He gets the blame. They get off scot-free. That's about how it works. Well, I mean, they don't get off scot-free. They just make more money. NAACP national champions. Merciful God. Because having health care is just like the Third Reich. Yeah. this from the guy who wanted gals to put an aspirin between their knees for contraception. Hey, you all know I'm nonviolent. I'm damn near a pacifist, but not quite. I ascribe to the nonviolent teachings of Gandhi and Dr. King. But Lord, 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 Lord. These right-wing jackasses, the Foster Freezes and Sheldon Adelsons of the world. I mean, I'm not saying it's right to put them up against the wall and give them a blindfold and a cigarette or anything, but why do they have to make their own arguments in favor of that? Somebody explain the nature of extreme wealth to me, especially extreme right-wing wealth, whereby you can be so isolated from the everyday goings-on of life, where you can be so isolated from the needs of people to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, where you can be so isolated even from common standards of essential decency that you can say, hey, let's put this out there with my name on it because the hep cat young kids will think it's funny. Because, you know, Hitler's funny. Funny Hitler. I mean, you got Mel Brooks out there. Look how well he did with the producers. I mean, Hitler on Ice, Springtime for Hitler. It's funny Hitler is funny. I mean, he put it up on his blog. Because the Affordable Care Act is just like Nazism. How many of these do we have to have? How many right-wing Republicans screaming, Nazi! Do we have to have before we realize that they're projecting and deflecting? That they despise what they imagine in others, what they most damned well know exists in themselves. There's no let up. And even when they're not just going straight up, straight up Nazi Tourette's, you can't avoid their little apocalyptic streak. Now, granted, you know, was it Rick who said it to Ilza, or was it Ilza who said it to Rick? We'll always have Paris.
The UConn Huskies are the 2014 NAACP national champs.
I mean, we'll always have Heather Childers. And by the way, I had a tweet from Fritz in Arkansas, who recommended that I have a look at the Wikipedia entry for Heather Childers. He says, interesting. Grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. High school, 1987. At 16, she crashed her 1964 Chevrolet Corvair into a tree on Queens Road West. Years of reconstructive facial and oral surgery. Attended University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Has a degree in English. I'm embarrassed. And And she started out at WCNC-TV. Then she was a talking head for WFXL. Then moved to Asheville, North Carolina. And became a general assignment reporter for Radio TV Rwanda in fall 2010. Oh, dear God. There's the interesting part. Thank you, Fritz. In April 2012, Heather Childers created controversy with a post on her Twitter account. In the post, Childers linked to an article from Godfather Politics, which was titled, "Did Obama Campaign Threaten Chelsea Clinton's Life?" Okay, I didn't know right-wingers could do that. That Barack Obama was trying to silence the Clinton family on the truth behind Obama's birth certificate. In response to criticism of the tweet, Childress said she was asking for opinion. They haven't gotten around to editing her Wikipedia page to note that she thinks that the University of Connecticut is the 2014 NAACP National Champions. Damn. But we're used to what we get out of Radio TV Rwanda. So then there's also Todd Starnes over at Radio TV Rwanda, and he's a culture warrior apparently. And he wrote an article in, I think, some sort of weirdo snake handling strychnine swig and floor rolling magazine called Charisma, in which he blames the gays for single-parent households and divorce. Alongside this is a Southern Baptist weirdo from Dallas who says that same-sex marriage is, quote, having devastating sociological effects. And uses as something passing for reasoning in Brother Jeffress's lizard brain that when you counter something, you cheapen its value. Okay, let's work with that for a minute. When you counter bigotry, you cheapen the value of bigotry. I like. So off and running is Todd Starnes from over at Radio TV Rwanda, and he says, the traditional nuclear family is on the verge of disaster. And once the nuclear family explodes, get it? Nuclear explodes. He's a witty one. The new United States should brace for a cultural Armageddon. Huh? I grew up in a time when father still knew best. When Mr. Cunningham was dispensing words of wisdom to Fonzie. When Andy took Opie fishing. And when Cliff Huxtable declared that he brought his son into the world and he could take him out. Yeah, there's nothing like a murder threat that really says quality parenting. It was a time when Hollywood reinforced the values of the traditional American family. Really? Having a motorcycle hoodlum living upstairs in your garage as American family? That was the premise of Happy Days, wasn't it? The Fonz lived in the up above the Cunningham's garage? Okay. Television shows like The Waltons, Little House on the Prairie, and The Brady Bunch presented portraits of strong families where parents ruled the roost and children... oh, wait. Children knew their place! Anybody want to fire up the Wayback Machine and tell me where that knew their place line comes from? Anybody, please? Pretty please? I don't have time to do all the typing and searching right now. Knew their place. The long gone. Nowadays, children know best, and dads are portrayed as dithering dolts. Instead of a mom and dad and two kids, the cul-de-sac includes, oh, he said sack, families with two mommies or two daddies or a mommy who identifies as a daddy, and they've been saddled with gender-neutral offspring. Oh, Oh, I think I'd like for Todd Starnes to take, maybe not put the aspirin between his knees, but maybe between, I don't know, but between his cheek and gums or something. This man, Thorazine, maybe. Critics might argue that the nation's divorce rate is actually declining, but Pastor Robert Jeffress believes that's evidence of a much greater problem. Fewer and fewer people are getting married, so fewer people are getting divorced. The overall health of the American family is in critical condition. When you counter something, you cheapen its value. When you say marriage is whatever you want it to be, people begin wondering, why bother getting married anyway? Stupid? I mean, Brother Jeffress? There's a whole host of reasons contained in the IRS tax code for getting married. But let's not bother Brother Jeffress with the facts. He's, as was the case with John Blutarsky, on a roll. This counterfeit of marriage is having devastating sociological effects. More kids are being raised in one-parent homes. You simply cannot break God's most basic moral law without serious ramifications. What can we do? The solution is simultaneously simple yet challenging. Simple in that we must return to God's pattern for the one family. God is the one who created the family. Before the church, he created the family, the fundamental unit of community. You know, the family where the one kid beat the other kid to death. Oh, well. Third time lucky. Yet reestablishing that unit as God intended it within our culture is easier said than done. Obviously because of the fervent opposition to biblical values, such as getting your daddy liquored up and having sex with him and creating an entire couple of nations just like Lot's daughters did. Biblical values. The warning signs are all around us. The traditional nuclear family is on the verge of disaster. And once the nuclear family explodes, the United States should brace for a cultural Armageddon. Can we prevent such a catastrophe by returning to God's design for the family? Like it or not, answering that question begins with the church. Wonder how it is that it begins with the church. Oh, Lordy. Note coming in from Granny T in Tennessee. She has a tech question. We'll get to that in a minute. She said, it does my little old granny heart good to know the NAACP is a big winner. First time I've laughed all day. Just got back from Kroger Food and Pharmacy. Broke again. Poverty world is so depressing. Please do a prosperity gospel tomorrow, Bob. I can use all the help I can get. Good wishes to you and the Horn family. Well, thank you, Granny T. And it does my heart good to know that, yes, I share your joy. And we'll work on that prosperity gospel a little bit. But Granny T also has a question for the Horn Family Commune. She says, well, the old Windows XP has reached the end of the trail. It's been mighty slow and messed up for a long time now, and I was hoping it would outlast me. Do you or any of your techie folks have any suggestions as to best mid-range price of a replacement? I'd like to get Windows 8.1, but don't know which brands to consider. Okay, before even the rest of the Horn Family Commune can chime in, no, Granny T, no. No, stay away from Windows 8.1. Stay away. Eschew Windows 8.1, which means to avoid something as if it was harmful, because it'll drive you mad. The other, I mean, you can go out. You don't necessarily have to wipe your computer. Windows XP doesn't stop working today. It's just that Microsoft, with 25% of American computers still running Windows XP, including a whole lot of bank ATMs, has decided that XP is simply not worth updating anymore. Never mind that it's probably the most popular operating system they've ever produced. They've decided to abandon it. So it doesn't mean it's going to stop working. It just means that security patches and things like that will no longer be generated. As long as you stay out of the nastier quadrants of the Internet and don't click on things that say, click here now, you should be okay. But if you want to upgrade, you don't have to buy a new machine. It's entirely possible, depending on what's in your machine, that you could simply install Windows 7, which is almost as much fun as Windows XP, once you get used to it. So, no, no Windows 8.1, but it's awfully good to hear from you, Granny T. So we will, here, let's wedge one more in here because America's moral arbiter is the former Korean War era liquor supply officer. And there's nothing like a little, I mean, we all need a little imprecatory prayer now and then, right? Okay, Marion. Get with it.
Obama, the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. Now, as you know, Christians don't think that Muhammad was a prophet, and they don't believe that. And these Hindus don't believe that, and a lot of secular people don't believe that. But Obama says the future isn't yours if you believe that. Our president is, frankly, out of his mind making a statement like that. The future belongs to those who believe.
And you know what? If anybody has a right to talk about people being out of their mind, it's a guy who already is. Yeah. I mean, you know, from the old schoolyard perspective of it takes one to know one. Yeah, Pat.
Believe in God Almighty, not those who believe in this stuff. And this is all here, and it also tells the story of this man, Muhammad, the fact that he fell amorously involved with a young girl at 6 years old whose name was Aisha. And when he was 53, he consecrated his marriage to her when she was 9 years old.
Oh, God Almighty, this again? He did not fall madly in love with a six-year-old named Aisha. And what does he mean by consecrated? Does that mean somebody had him hold hands and she became one of his wives? Probably. I mean, Pat! Buddy, how old do you think Lot's daughters were when they got daddy liquored up and rode him like a barred mule? Okay, not a mule. Horse. Goat. Sheep. I am in love with that sheep. How old, Marion? Marion? How old? How old were some of Solomon's and David's concubines and occasional spouses? But anyway.
Now, I don't know what you call that, Terry. You've got...
Well, I think in America we would call that pedophilia.
Well, we would. 53-year-old man, a 9-year-old girl. I mean, and she was his favorite wife. It's all in here. And it's published by... It's put together by The Truth... group of people who are Muslim scholars. I think you need to know this. And
yeah, they're Muslim scholars, kind of the way I'm a Christian scholar. No, not even that. They're Muslim scholars the way Bazooka Joe is a philosopher. They're inside the bubblegum wrapper.
We need to do something to pray to be delivered from this president who is... He is a disaster, an absolute disaster. I mean, I don't know, Democrat, Republican, or whatever. This country is into serious decline unless something dramatic is done about it.
Where'd that there decline come from, Marion? I mean, you were right there on board with those Bush tax cuts that basically gutted the financial infrastructure of the country. Where'd the decline come from? I mean, when an interstate bridge collapses, is that a Muslim interstate bridge collapse? When a right-wing red state decides to tear up its asphalted paved roads and return them to their gravel state, is that Islamic gravel, Pat? Is it Islam on the march when the fire department shows up at your house and they let the house burn down because you didn't pay your capitalist fire department fee? Is that Islam, Pat? Is that the collapse you're talking about, or are you just worried about who's picking out a goddamn China pattern, you old fraud, you? age. I mean, you get an idea of what a joy, I mean, what a merry romp it is putting together something like Titanic Tuesday. The Horn is, of course, listener-supported conversation radio. Darlene has a challenge on the table, offering to double the money of anybody who contributes this evening, up to $100, which would go a long way toward the $375 we need to raise this evening. Your help is required, though, because, well, in order for the challenge to work, the $100 first has to happen. Dan has very kindly gotten us halfway to that. Dan needs 5 more friends at 10, 10 more at 50, or 2 more at 25. You know how it works. PayPal button, or send me a note and say, hey, it's in the mail, so I can tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to wear the spider-proof gloves to the mailbox. No ads here, just your determination to continue with independent media. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, the Yukon Huskies are the 2014 NAACP National Champs.
Yes, they are. This is the Horn.
Basketball Jones! I got a basketball Jones! Got a basketball Jones! And I love that basketball. I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I even put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for me at the free throw line of life. Someone to hit the open man on to give him goal and not end up in the popcorn machines. So cheerleaders, help me out.
Thank you.
It's Tuesday, April 8, 2014.
You cannot destroy your economy while embracing some kind of phantom global warming theory, even if that theory might someday be valid.
Someday is today, as study finds CNN and Fox News fail on climate change.
There's two parts of this story, the ocean and the plane. This, I think, is why human beings are not going to survive, because they couldn't see which was the important one.
CNN looks for missing plane, finds an ocean full of garbage. Plus,
it's being billed by the Department of Justice as the largest settlement in an environmental contamination case ever, bigger even than the BP oil spill settlement a few years ago.
Energy company fined for 85 years of toxic waste dumping.
better late than never?
Nah.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Of course, I love Mother Earth. Just like the wise Native Americans with the buffalo, I believe we should exploit every part of the planet.
Working on it. This is your Green News Report.
There's still a couple of animals I haven't worn as shoes yet.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we have been complaining on the Green News Report for more than 5 years now about the lack of coverage in the corporate mainstream media about global warming. And now, all of a sudden, we're seeing a special on NBC about global warming on Sunday night. We're seeing a new series on Showtime called Years of Living Dangerously about global warming. Has the tide turned on this issue? Pardon the pun?
No, not really. Only for some media outlets. On the heels of the latest UN report last week warning that the window of opportunity is closing to act on climate change, now a new study finds that CNN and Fox News actually hurt the public's understanding of climate change by undermining climate science.
So we have a few documentary shows, a few specials, but the news that most Americans watch every day is actually reversing our knowledge of what we should know.
Yeah, according to a study by the Union of Concerned Scientists, over the year 2013, MSNBC's coverage of climate change was the most accurate, 93% of the time. CNN's coverage was misleading one-third of the time, mostly because they still insist on airing debates with climate change deniers. But at Fox News, boy, their reporting on climate science was accurate only 28% of the time. That means they mislead the public on climate change 72% of the time. And that's an improvement.
I was going to say, not surprising. That sounds pretty good for Fox.
Yeah, they used to get it accurate only 7% of the time. It's no wonder Americans are so deeply uninformed about climate change when the top cable news channel misinforms them the vast majority of the time. Here, for example, is the top show on the top cable news channel.
A UN report says that the Earth is in peril, grave danger. But again, nobody really knows whether it's true.
Well, yes, we do. The thousands of scientists who worked on the report that you're reporting on, Bill O'Reilly, say that it's true. What do you mean nobody knows if it's true?
And speaking of CNN, CNN's highly criticized wall-to-wall coverage of the search for the missing Malaysian Airlines plane has actually had one unusual side benefit, forcing CNN to accidentally notice that the ocean is filled with trash that's complicating their efforts to find the plane. In an interview with Fusion TV, comedian Bill Maher criticized the corporate media for once again focusing on the wrong thing.
It's been a sobering experience when one week after another we see, oh, there's all this debris floating in the ocean and all this stuff that we have to get out. Yeah, that's the stuff we need to get out of the ocean, oil slicks and dead whales and cargo and plastic. The focus, as always in America, is on the wrong thing.
We've been covering the Pacific garbage patch for some years on the Green News Report. I don't think people understand this huge, huge pile of plastic garbage in the ocean, larger than the state of Texas. And that's only one part of the garbage that's out there in the ocean.
And, of course, after finding all this ocean garbage, CNN immediately returns to ignoring it.
Of course they did.
In other news, a record settlement for toxic waste dumping in the U.S. The Justice Department has announced Anadarko Petroleum has agreed to pay a record $5 billion fine to settle all claims related to toxic chemical waste dumped at thousands of sites across the country by its subsidiary, Kerr-McGee, over 85 years. But don't worry about parent company Anadarko. Their stock soared on news of the settlement, closing up 14%, in part because the DOJ's $5 billion settlement won't really hurt the company at all, as Rachel Maddow explains.
Anadarko is a $51 billion company. On the same day they were ordered to pay that $5 billion fine, investors poured $6 billion back into the company's stock. They made money on the deal. Only in the oil and chemical industry can getting slapped with a $5 billion fine. The largest fine ever in the history of the Republic. Only in that industry can that result in a great day for your bottom line. Pays to be the most profitable industry the world has ever known.
It pays indeed. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, this little break in the action's had a lot of great music associated with it. Of course, I had to go, thanks to Heather Childers, I had to go there, had to play Cheech and Chong's 1973 classic Basketball Jones. And no cheating and going to the interweb tubes. You either know this or you don't. Who played guitar on Basketball Jones? No prizes. Sorry, just don't. But who played guitar? Let's see, email, Twitter, Facebook, it's fine, whichever way you want to. But again, no running off to the interweb tubes. So, and by the way, we've got a reminder, we do have a fundraising goal on the table this evening. Darlene has kindly provided a challenge this evening, doubling the first $100 that come in. We're $50 toward that goal, and Dan could sure use some friendship and help in that effort. Call button or the traditional mail address, just let me know either way. And thanks very kindly, because we are trying to raise all of this week's funds and next week's funds this week so that when we get back here, everything will still be okay when we get back from D.C. It is 18 minutes before the hour, and this is, after all, Conversation Radio. And we're celebrating this evening. We are celebrating the University of Connecticut Huskies being the 2014 NAACP National Champions. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Doesn't that just kind of get a Moron Monday, Titanic Tuesday, Church Wednesday?
It's got it. It really does. I mean, this is
one nomination.
Yeah, this is a multitasker. I mean, this is a triple threat. That has everything.
Yep. And I don't think
Was it as devastating for you, Kevin, as it was for me? I couldn't stop. I may play it 19 more times this evening.
Well, no, because I personally don't believe it was an accident. I think she was put up to it by someone who knew what NAACP meant. And whether she did or not, somebody put her up to it.
Hey, wait, I hadn't even thought about that. I was just assuming that, you know, she's stupid. And not,
no.
And I mean, that doesn't come with any gender or race. Or she just works for Fox, and therefore she's dumber than a bag of hammers. But you know what? Those people don't see, I mean, nothing goes out over the air that isn't punched into a teleprompter first, right?
Right, and that's why a producer, you're talking about everybody from scriptwriters to producers missing that until it goes out over the air and it's still not taken down. I tend to believe it wasn't an accident myself. And she said it with such a cheerful voice, too. That's what made it, you know.
Oh, my God, you should have. If you could. I thought Ferg was going to stand up out of the chair, and I was going to see a dozen eggs sitting there. I mean, you should have heard him cackle. It was priceless.
Yeah, I just, and then was it going to Foster something or other?
Oh, Foster Freeze.
Hitler's thing.
Yeah.
It is, you know, that kind of proves the other part, that maybe it wasn't on purpose, because how stupid can you get by doing what he did and actually making the other side's points for them without us having to work at all? I mean, I listened to that and I thought, you know, we don't need to work, just let these people fill their own stupidity up with it, and, you know. But unfortunately, they really aren't that stupid.
But you know how my mind works. I'm thinking of the hundreds of thousands of nonagenarians out there who are just Marveline, I know we missed the game, but that the 2014 NAACP champions is the UConn's.
Yep.
And that's cool, because they're cons and not liberals.
Yep. Yep. So, I just wanted to kind of comment on that, because I'm
it's irresistible.
Well, it is. I mean, you don't need to say anything. It comes with that commentary. You just play the clip, and it kind of comments for itself. And, you know, I think you said mention something about her Wikipedia
entry. Yeah. Did Barack Obama try to have Chelsea Clinton killed?
Yeah, and I'm left in amazement sometimes by them because of what they do, except that we face. I also get to where I'm get pretty disgusted and depressed because I feel like they've won, and I feel like there's not much we can do about it, but...
Well, there's one thing you can do. You can darn well go to the polls in November.
Yeah, but the way they gerrymander in certain districts, you know, it almost doesn't matter there. And with the Koch money stealing the elections, you know, they use that money to convince people to vote against their own self-interest, and that's the most frustrating part for me is, you know, the voting electorate, a good part of them just aren't paying attention. If they were, there would be people in the streets. Because whether you're actually what used to be passed for conservative or liberal, if you have any common sense to what's happening today with everything, just about, you realize that's about all that's left to you is to get in the streets and protest. The FEC ruling came out the other day, that's just more proof to me, Bob, that's all that's left to us, because if it goes to the Supreme Court, once it goes there, what else is left? We can petition Congress to rewrite a law, but that's not going to happen.
But I mean, you confirmed for me once upon a time that Doug Lamborn is your Congress critter, right?
Yep.
So any chance you get to go to the polls and make sure that you've stood up and been counted as, I do not sanction this guy who supports the poisoning and killing of hillbillies. Any chance to sort of separate yourself from the herd that does, I think is a good thing.
Oh yeah, I won't not vote. I'm not saying that. I just
and you know, if you want to a little bit later, maybe as we get nearer November, is he just a shoo-in? Is there no viable Democratic challenger?
Pretty much. He's had a couple over the years, but I think this last election 2 years ago, nobody ran against him.
Does he have opposition this time through?
Not that I know of. I don't think Chappie's running for his seat.
No, Chappie's running for the state house.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I mean, maybe closer to the election, just a little reminder to the voters in the district that man supports the poisoning and of the unborn in Appalachia. Maybe that'll resonate with some of those fetus fetishists out that way.
Well, you would hope, and we are gaining traction here in this particular county. The influence of Focus has decreased quite a bit. I'm proud to say, still very conservative, but it has decreased, and I think we did over 40% in the presidential election, and when I say we, I mean the votes Barack Obama got compared to his challenger, you know, which for El Paso County is a pretty high vote total for the presidential election, so, but it just, you know. I find it discouraging at times, and I won't give up that right to vote because it's too precious a right, so no, I'm not going to not vote. And even if Wayne Ward were running unopposed, you know, I can undervote that particular election just to show my disapproval. You know, so if 30,000 people are eligible to vote and Lamborn only gets 20,000 votes, you can bet that 10,000 people deliberately didn't vote for him, even though there was no opponent. So, you know, you do have the opportunity to do things like that, but I guess I'm just a little bit to the left.
I'd like to see him explain why it is he supports birth defects in Appalachian unborn.
Well, because number one, it's not here. You know, I mean, that would be his first reason, and then just like Joe Manchin, coal. Because the ultimate answer to everything is because money. And so that would be his first reasoning.
You mean jobs?
Yep.
And remember, this is the guy who sicked the Capitol Police on Maria Gano.
Oh, yeah.
Over a photograph of a little girl sitting in coal-poisoned bathwater.
Yep. So about how much play did that get out here in Colorado?
None?
A little bit more than none, but pretty much you could say that. So.
Yeah, you'd have to have calipers or an electron microscope or something to measure the coverage, right?
Yeah, you've got Boulder. So you did get some coverage, but this end of the state, I would guess that there wasn't any.
So that district takes in Boulder?
No.
Oh.
But as far as the coverage of him doing that, because it was a Colorado representative, they did cover it. Denver and Boulder both did, along with Colorado Springs, but the Colorado Springs story was maybe one line long, you know? Something to the effect of Doug Lamborn kicked somebody out, sick the Capitol Police on somebody, you know, it didn't say why or, you know what I'm saying? It was your basic one-line thing that got no play and got no real coverage out here because the people here are more than happy for Mr. Lamborn to continue to vote for military bases to remain open and military contracts to be sent here. So, you know, as long as he does that, aside from his politics, these people are going to vote for him. Even though that in itself is not a, even that important to this economy anymore. We've got Fort Carson and Schriever, but you can make an argument that the military contribution to the city in some ways is declining as the city becomes more diverse. You know, we're not all dependent.
But the idea, then again, there's Louis Gohmert, and I've got him in the stacks, too. But the idea that there's, in a place like Colorado, that there would even be one district where there's not a credible progressive or even Democratic challenger to somebody like Doug Lamborn, I find that, not shocking, but discouraging.
Well, yeah, and that's why I say sometimes it gets discouraging, because even when there has been a credible challenger to Mr. Lamborn, guys that were military guys, generals that ran against him, I can't think of the man's name right now, but the other one I just talked with last week, a guy by the name of Hal Bidlack, and they ran very credible campaigns against him and still weren't able to get more than 30-40% of the vote.
I'm sure there's a lot of TV ads with Doug Lamborn kissing hands and shaking babies
And the one military general that ran against him, and Hal may have been that too, I can't remember, but the one general that ran against him before Mr. Bivlak was a very accomplished military person. He just happened to be one with a bit of common sense and ran as a Democrat. But that didn't matter to the people that it was a military person. It didn't matter at all. You know, and it speaks also to the entrenchedness of especially the Congress people. You know, if you're the incumbent in those elections, I would say more than even president, it's a big advantage to be the incumbent congressman.
Oh, without a doubt, that it's almost impossible to unseat them. Unless the teabaggers get mad at them.
Yeah. Or unless they, do something like tap toes in a men's restroom somewhere. You know, that kind of thing. Which I kind of hope for the day that Mr. Lamborn gets caught saying something like that. But, you know, that's about all you got. And that's the position, when you think about it, of all the seats from state government up, you have to continuously fundraise because you're being elected every 2 years. And so why is it that the seat which is voted upon the most out of any of the federal government seats is the one that is hardest to unseat the incumbent? You know, and that, because money.
There you go.
The incumbent has a great advantage in fundraising, and so that's the answer. So, anyway, you could play that about 20 more times. I still would.
It's precious, isn't it? Like I said, this has real potential to become just added into the rotation. Alongside Jeff Spicoli hollering, "You dick!"
Yeah, I think so. And, I'm sure Miss Childers got a raise after that. You know, knowing Fox News, they promoted her. So, I just find it incredible that it would happen on a national news.
Well, show. No, you really have. You've planted something for me to wonder about whether or not. I wonder if there's a little insurgency going on inside Fox in which copywriters just sneak stuff in there and know that the bubble-headed bleach blonde who comes on at 5 and can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye will just read it off and never notice, because Atne Ute Aitpre, if you own it, what I mean, mate.
Yep. Yeah, it's very possible. I know when you were talking about the other story and you were commenting on the fact that nobody seemed to catch anything. The writers for Forrest, whatever his name is, just no one could say to him, "Hey, boss, you might not want to do this." That was my thought there. No one wants to, you know, and there's someone that's, by their silence, you know, actually proving how stupid they are and doing it on purpose, you know, and I think that might be part of what's going on, but either way, good grief, as many, you know, NAACP and NCAA are really not that close, and even if you're not a sports fan, you would hope if you were a national reporter that you would know the difference between the two abbreviations. So, and I just can't. I really can't. I can't get over how cheery your voice sounds about it, too. You know, that's what makes it so precious. Is even though I can't see her, Bob, that's the mental image I get is of a.
Oh, I mean, yeah, she's just bubbly and perky and happy and well, she's got to give the Fox demographic another reason to live another day and order another Bose Wave radio and get suckered in by the vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls and buy more gold now and yeah, it's got to be perky and upbeat even when you're talking about that Kenyan Muslim Islamo fascist communist with a deep seated hatred of white people.
Yeah, and that's the exact mental image I get. You know, remember the old WKRP running joke that they used to do? A very tragic story, and immediately after the very tragic story, they went to the reporter, who a very perky reporter, who was smiling and, you know, about the next tragic story, you know, and... That's kind of what I see with her, and I just wish that some common sense would return to America real quick, like, besides the obvious havens that we have of it in America, your show, Malloy's show, a few others. I think Brad made a good point of mentioning Fox's coverage of the plane crash, and how they accidentally had to notice the trash in the water, but then just as accidentally forget to mention it. And for two solid weeks now, if not more, every time I've turned on CNN, don't care what time of the day or night I turn the CNN on, it's coverage about the plane crash. Isn't
that
what's going on in the world?
Right, and see, CNN's only upset about the trash in the Indian Ocean because it's getting in the way of their story.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, it's awful good to hear from you, and we will talk again soon, I hope. And with any luck at all, maybe we'll collaborate later on a little letter to the voters of Doug Lamborn.
Well, that would work.
All right, sounds fun.
All right.
You take care.
See you later.
All right, bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, and I'm going right back to the phones. We do have lines open, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you've heard some of the calls that come in on Skype, you know that it works magnificently. What Kevin was talking about with the old WKRP gag and whatever. Any time's a good time to run this clip, the classic clip of Casey Kasem coming completely unglued in the studio because, you know, he's trying to make a mood there. Take it away, Casey.
We're up to our long-distance dedication, and this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. It's the last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record
that is that's up tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.
Well, the Yukon Huskies are the 2014 NAACP National Champs.
Yes, they still are. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
We know, Jim.
First off, I'm notifying you that I'm going to send you by a snail mail $26.66 contribution matching fund, whatever.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
I have to throw in that just at 6-6.
Yeah, right. I understand. It's not prayer meeting yet, but still.
Well, it's a thought that counts.
Absolutely. And after all, Todd Starnes over there at Radio TV Rwanda has done said that we're facing a gay marriage Armageddon.
Well, this is off the conservative Christians. I'm all for it. And any religious fundamentalist. In fact, that's kind of why I called Pat Robinson and his little bit. But I've noticed, decades ago, I was a Buddhist, and even in Buddhism, it's always into being different sects because this relates to Pat Robinson. It's like he's basically a Protestant, right?
Well, yeah, he's a fundamentalist evangelical.
Right. So basically, as far as he's concerned, if you're a Catholic, you're still going to hell, right?
Oh, you're cooking anyway. Absolutely.
Well,
you're just Mary worshiping etouffee.
Right. I mean, it's just like with the Muslim religion or faith. It's kind of the same way. If you're Shiite, you're in the right club as opposed to a Sunni and vice versa because they killed you.
So I ran across this earlier today. There's no picture of the face or anything, but it's some goober wearing a sandwich sign that reads as follows, Jim. Warning to all. Whores, just kind of keep track of the list and see how many of these things you fall under, and you can then calculate your broiling factor from there. Warning to all. Whores, whoremongers, adulterers, adulteresses, porn-loving masturbators, sodomites, lesbians, girly men, manly women, immodest and rebellious women, because there's nothing, apparently the immodest and rebellious men, they get a pass right through the pearly gates. Alcohol drinkers, pot smokers, drug heads, tattoo getters, party animals, dirty dancers, potty mouths, blasphemers, liars, gossipers, thieves, gangster rappers, rock and rollers, entertainment and sport worshippers, jewelry worshippers, parent haters, bitter people, merciless devils, occult witches and sorcerers, money-hungry career pursuers, envious and thankless idolaters, prideful scoffers, God mockers, Bible skeptics, gurus, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Christ-rejecting Jews, Mary-worshipping Catholics, sin-friendly heresy teachers, and every other form of life that is contrary to the holy law of God, hell awaits you if you do not abandon your sin and run to Christ for mercy.
Well,
now I need a break.
I think I'm in about 25 of those categories.
I counted 17 for me.
Well,
that's only because the immodest and rebellious men get a pass.
Yeah. But I didn't count that. That would make it 26, the number of letters in the alphabet. So I'm sure I miscounted one. So just like the $26.66 on
precisely.
He's snail mailing it.
Exactly.
I think that's a cosmic sign. I think the stars are in line.
I do too. Absolutely. That whole list there. I don't know if you were the a Warner Brothers cartoon junkie growing up like I was, because we're kind of close in age. But there was one in which everybody was running from the Tasmanian devil, and so Bugs is sitting there reading off the list of all the things that the Tasmanian devil liked to eat. You know, rats, bats, elephants, giraffes, armadillos, aardvarks, blah 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 blah. This huge list. He goes, "Hey, ain't no rabbits on here." at which point the Tasmanian devil kindly walks up and scrawls onto the list, and rabbits. Yeah, everybody's going.
Yeah.
you know, nobody gets a break.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's just like with the oil industry. Nobody gets a break.
No. No. Yeah, everybody, you know, you're down that way. I imagine by now folks have kind of gotten used to where they sort of expect and anticipate, and well, by now they probably kind of like the taste of a little bit of Corexit and crude oil in their oysters.
Yeah, like I said, I was up to last week, so having some seafood. It's you know, tasted all right to me. I'm kind of curious. I had some raw oysters and stuff, and I'm not sure because I was trying to find out where do oysters exactly come from? Is it salt water, or is it? And somebody said it's brackish, which is kind of a mixture of both.
Right. Yeah, it's salt and fresh.
Right. So and who knows what else is in the water anyway? And in the air. I mean, it's just like I mean.
Well, yeah, two of the most poisoned regions of this country are Appalachia and the Bayou Gulf Coast, from roughly the extreme western end of Florida all the way to Corpus Christi.
Yeah, you don't want to stay in Houston too long either, from what I understand. Yeah, that's one of the most air polluted cities in the world, if not that country.
Right, because they're job creators down there. Exactly. You got it. You know the drill.
Yep. And it's just like that Todd Robinson thing. It's so weird. I think I've mentioned this to you before. A lot of Christians do not know. I mean, they're either Catholic or Protestant. I've asked them. I believe in Jesus. Okay, yeah, but you're a Catholic or a Protestant. I'm a Christian. Okay, you are a Christian. You have to be one or the other. You can't be both. In fact, I have a friend whose wife recently discovered Jesus, and they've been together for a while, and they kind of tolerate. He's kind of in the Church of Bob. You know, I mentioned that to you before, but they just kind of tolerate each other's differences and beliefs. But she's told me she'll go to a Protestant thing and then a Catholic thing literally in the same day. And you know, it seems like one cancels out the other, you know. Like I said, I was a Buddhist, and when I was a Buddhist, the sect I was in, the other sects were all heresy. It was just,
well, right, you know, because there's a humongous difference between, say, Japanese Zen Buddhism and the rattle twirlers of Tibet.
Yeah, well, I was Nichiren Shoshu, you know, the Nam-myoho Renge-kyo. And I did that for about five, six years. The chant seemed cool, and I got into it. And but after about 5 or 6 years, it just seemed dogmatic bullshit, you know.
Oh, I got my feet wet in Zen Buddhism in college, and it wasn't delivered to me as a religion, but more as an existential philosophy for getting from day this to day tomorrow, day this to day next.
Well, that's how I got into Buddhism to begin with, because it was to the writer Alan Watts.
Oh, sure, exactly. Yeah.
And he had this great book, Tao is the Water Course Way. And
I had a book. It was required reading in college. I don't know what happened to it. I've missed it since I lost it. It was one of those books that has the paragraphs that you have to read 19 times before you can go to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just called, what was it? The Zen Reader, or something like that. And Alan Watts was in there, and D.T. Suzuki, and it disappeared. And, oh, the Buddha Eye. Maybe that was what it was called, the Buddha Eye. And I've never been able to find it again, and it had a profound impact, but I wasn't, but that's the problem. I'm not a very good joiner, Jim.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I tried. I tried for 6 years.
Ack-ack-ack-ack-ack-a-dack, Flintstone. It ain't me.
I mean, I tried. It was kind of cool for a while, but then it just got too dogmatic, and then it was like, oh, you got to go to the quote-unquote head temple of Chicago, and you can drive up.
And sooner or later, somebody's going to try to separate you from your money.
That's funny you should mention that, because even then, it was, you know, like they'd take trips to Japan to go see the head temple.
Well, right, and if you're a Muslim, as long as it's within your means, you are obliged to go on pilgrimage, and you know, there's a whole industry there for dealing with pilgrims, and yeah, most of them have to do with wallet lightening.
Yeah,
and you know, the American Jewish community, yeah, you gotta go to Israel, and you know, the Roman Catholic community wants to, you know, everybody wants to go to Rome. Who else? You know, I don't know where the Southern Baptists go. Mostly we go to amusement parks.
The one with the dinosaurs.
Well, except for Gay Days at Disney World. I mean, not a fun bunch, the Southern Baptists.
Yeah, but like you were saying, what the thing, and the thing was, it's, in thinking back on it, it was almost that even if you don't have the money, just determine you're going to go, and somehow the money will appear. And even if you do, then there's the magic thinking that the money will come back. Not only come back, but come back 2, 3, 4, 5-fold or 10-fold even. I mean, there wasn't...
Pressed down and shaken together. That's the phrase you're looking for, Jim.
Yeah, I mean,
cast thy bread upon the waters, and they will be returned unto thee, pressed down and shaken together.
Yeah, and I've seen it, because I'll flip by, you'll flip by TV, and it'll be a religious preacher, and it'll say, here comes tenfold, and he's that guy out of Texas, I think out of Dallas, with the white, the silver hair.
Oh, Kenneth Copeland?
Is that the one that talks? He'll be talking just like I'm talking to you, and all of a sudden just go in the tongue, da, 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 and then just go right back.
It could be any of them.
Yeah, now,
he's the one who has the daughter who helped start the measles outbreak in Texas a few months back.
Oh, that's nice of her. Well, at least she's sending more souls. There's more souls going to, some going to heaven, some going to hell. Either way. But I mean, just like that Pat Robinson thing, it's just so, I just like that, like I said, you try and ask them, and they don't even know their own religion. And it's, you do know that that means if you're not in exactly the right club, you're going to hell. In fact, you go there faster, quicker, you know, more so because you're pursuing a false prophet, if I'm not incorrect in my interpretations of their religion, which, like most other, a lot of other religions.
Now, Jim, for instance, we got our buddy Marty, and Marty is a practical man, first and foremost. So now since we talked about all the pilgrimages, we got Marty thinking. And I just got a very simple email from him. Who goes to New Zealand and why do they go? Because I don't think that was a quiz. I think Marty's looking for a religion that'll give him an excuse to move to New Zealand.
I don't know. See different animals. See Darwinism and work. That would be one, you know. Just to,
Oh sure, any. Okay. The Church of Tolkien, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien. Waggy pointing out the Church of Tolkien goes to New Zealand to see the sets for the movies. There you go.
Yeah,
Lottie pointing in on the chat room. You know, really, it's easier just to throw your money into the sky, and whatever God wants, he can take, and the rest that falls back is yours.
I like that. That's what the comic said about flying to New Zealand once. It's, Lewis Black. It's like pressing your head for 26 hours straight. I mean, because I imagine being on a plane that long can be, I have to go to London and then back from Amsterdam decades ago. And, that's just 6-7 hours from New Orleans. But I guess going to New Zealand a little bit further.
Yeah, I think, 22 hours from LA or something like that. Exactly. Hey, Jim, it's good to talk to you, and thanks for helping out between you and Sal and Dan. We are now only $20 away from meeting Darlene's challenge, and that means a great, great deal.
All right, well, the money order will be in the mail. I just made it up to
Head on Communications.
Head on Communications. All right.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. Bye, Jim. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. And lines are open. We've got about, 30 minutes more of good conversation in the program remaining. If you want to jump in, 304-658-3333, or on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Give me an old time religion. What? Tom?
Yeah, and now the harp solo.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I won't be able to really play that harp with the strings on it for a while, Bob.
No, the wrong harp.
Well, I know. I was in line for that, you know, but one of these damn horn people had to save my ass, you know, and, And the thing is, my creditors don't even appreciate that, you know.
But, you know, I saw a story earlier today, Bill, that I got to thinking of you. It was, apparently some of the giants of the genre, I was thinking about the fact that you showed up on TV and blasted a few bars on your harp not too long back.
Yeah.
And did an admirable job, I might add. But apparently it's not working out so.
I can't do much, you know.
Apparently it's not working out so well for Chuck Berry and B.B. King.
Well, I was supposed to see B.B. tomorrow night.
Really?
Yeah, he's coming by to a gambling joint that opened up around Northfield Road, which is Southfield, believe it or not, Northfield.
I saw a story out of St. Louis about a show from a night or two ago, and they said he led the crowd in a 15-minute rendition of You Are My Sunshine.
Really?
Yeah. And went off on long, confused monologues. A lot of people walked out, demanded their money back. And that's a crappy thing to do to somebody like B.B.
Well,
and then I guess there was a recent incident with Chuck Berry where it didn't work out so well. But, you know, Jesus, 88 years old and still on the road. I got to admire that. And you hope they're not doing it because they have to do it as opposed to they just don't want to quit. You know, it's in their blood and they got to do it.
He's a large family guy, and he's been out there helping the family for years now. And you know, I'll tell you something that a lot of people don't know. That's a lot of the blues critics were not real pleased with him. They didn't, they considered him overly commercialized. And this was guys in the 60s. When I was at the Ann Arbor Blues Festival, the second one they had, which would have been 70, I think. And I had breakfast at a motel with my wife. And I was talking to a guy named Paul Oliver, who's a writer. He wrote a book called Blue Spell This Morning and blah, blah. He's an Englishman. And, of course, we know the Englishmen have the inside track on the stuff, you know. Just ask them. Critics of all kinds are enough to make you. Would you pass me that empty bucket over there when they talk about critics? But anyway, that's another story. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I'll have to talk to my piano player because I wonder, is he still out? The thing is, he's still out there. Or because he's been out there too long.
Could be. And by the way, there was another thing. There was another thing that made me think of you, and this is not a negative thing. It's just I was watching a couple of nights ago the Walter Salles, and I presume I'm pronouncing his name right, S-A-L-L-E-S, the Walter Salles film version of Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
Oh.
And I immediately thought of stories that you've told, because the Dean Moriarty character was forever carrying around pockets full of Benzedrine inhalers.
Yeah.
And there were scenes where, you know, the party's going on, the jazz and the blues is blasting in the background, people are dancing frenetically, and he hauls one of those things out of his pocket and smashes it with a beer bottle. To get the little wadding out of it.
Get that little wad of cotton and either soak it or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like he was dropping it in a cup of coffee or something.
Poor man's speed. I messed with it in the beginning because that's what somebody told me to try. And my mother went to the diet doctor, and she comes home with a bottle of Dexedrine that was Christmas trees, they called it. Was a slang term. And when I was delivering milk and had to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning, I think I dropped the stuff twice because I had to go to work. And as you got through with your day's work, you went home, ate some dinner, took a hot bath, and went to bed. Because I was worried. One thing about me, tobacco is a big enough addiction in most people's lives. No way around that.
Yeah, your addiction didn't need friends.
No. No, my old man got busted in 46 with a pound of reefer. I think I've told you too many times his brother was the man with the golden hands as far as the guys he worked for. Anything that needed to be repaired from a pinball machine to a slot machine. My uncle could do it, and of course he had connections and cost my old man a lot of money, but he never went. You think he got a year's probation or something for a pound of reefer in 46, Bob?
You know, that's unusual for that era, without a doubt.
Sir, well, money talks, and, you know, the rest of it, well, because nothing is different. I mean, the Irish street gangs in New York, the gangs of New York, you saw the movie, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a book out that I had on CD or on tape or something, an audio about the Chicago machine and what it accomplished, including the guys that were hanging out in Cuba right when Castro took over. That bunch, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with any of their names, but they wanted to take Havana and turn it into another Vegas.
Oh, sure.
Americans had their eyes on Cuba since the days of slavery.
That was step two after achieving their independence from the despotic United States government. The Confederacy wanted to annex Cuba.
Yep. Well, we had a guy down. Some guy took over Nicaragua for a while. Can't think of his name. Can't think of my own name some days anymore. But all this stuff has happened. People, when there's a chance to put a hand on something, grab it, and screw somebody in the process, there's a whole lot of people that will do it. And I hate to be so cynical, because what do we hang on to? What do we look forward to? What can we believe in? That's the question I keep asking. What can we believe in? The fact that the sun maybe will come up tomorrow? We hope, you know.
Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there will be sun. Sorry.
Yeah. What song was that from?
That's Tomorrow from the Broadway musical Annie.
Annie?
Yeah, which the right wing is now highly upset about, because Annie will be played by a girl with a high melanin content in her skin.
Well, my God, how could that happen?
Well, you know, Santa Claus was white, and so was Little Orphan Annie.
Yeah, poor You know, let's say, wasn't Annie kind of a poor kid that was adopted by Daddy Warbucks or something like that? I never followed that script too much.
Nor I.
No, it wasn't one of my favorites. I was more the humor type strip. That Jimmy Hatlow's "They'll Do It Every Time" was just nurturing to my cynicism. I don't know if you ever saw that one or not. I know it didn't appear everywhere. But I said a classic to me was a guy who's being interviewed for a job and the boss is telling you how great your coworkers are, and the next scene, which took a look at the coworkers, they were flying paper airplanes around and joy buzzing each other and all this inanity, you know. This guy's telling you what a great crew this is to work with. These are really sterling people. Okay, next. It's like, what? Because so many, I guess the Q magazine used to have a thing, and one of them was a true cartoon that showed a car mechanic shoveling out of a bucket of bolts, shoveling him into somebody's motor. You know, that kind of stuff. That's just the sickest, you know, the cynicism that we get a car back from a mechanic and it's rattling around. Like, what the hell did he do to this thing? I guess that's human nature. What that cynicism did to me was just make me tougher. Just make me say, oh, the hell, this is the way it is, but you have to keep going somehow. And you don't want to make a lot of enemies, so you treat people decently. And hey, that's that. I had my ex-piano player and another harp player, and then Colin came over. I had three musicians sitting here. The health aide came up from the laundry, and she listened to these guys talk. And when they left, she said, Bill, I didn't know these guys, you know, knew you that well. I said, well, they should know me. One of them worked with me for 30 years. He should know. But Foster Freeze, what does he do again?
He's a money shuffler.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm trying. I had it here just a minute ago. There he is. Apparently he is worth $1 billion. Businessweek says that he may be the longest surviving successful growth stock picker, having navigated markets for 36 years in his own firm since 1974.
Okay.
He's a speculator.
Oh, great. Oh, wasn't there a villain in one of the comic books, Mr. Freeze?
Oh, that's Batman, yes.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. I'm surprised nobody has jumped on that one yet. Nobody's... nothing beats a cheap shot like that, you know. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. But I won't keep you, but it's just... I don't know, I just give up with some of this. Like, what is the news about a plane that went down over the Pacific? Jeez, how many times has that happened in our lifetime, Pop? How many fighters were German pilots, British pilots, American pilots, Japanese pilots?
Right, and then there's Japan Airlines and Korean Airlines and...
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, there's something macabre and sort of sick in the in the fascination over Flight 370. It's got a kind of a Nancy Grace quality to it, where you know that the boys at corporate at CNN, if they could just find some footage of some bodies bobbing in the water, man, they would hire a helicopter and they'd go out with the longest lens they had and see if they couldn't get up close and personal footage. And then they'd have breathless music, stirring minor chord music and maybe some breathless drumming in the background and a breathless anchor underneath. The following images may be disturbing for some people. And then run it for all they're worth. Because that, Bill, is how the for-profit media work.
Some folks.
I mean, look, CNN.
We got to see it, you know.
Yeah, there were 100. There were in excess of 100 missing people in Oso, Washington, from a mudslide that was brought on by clear cutting, greed because money. And CNN could scarcely be bothered to cover that
I was wondering how much coverage they gave them.
Because they were busy speculating on whether aliens made the plane disappear.
Yeah, what bothers me is I don't have speakers in my bedroom yet for the computer, so I have to listen to... Well, I've got one of those Seacray radios that they used to advertise, and it'll pull Chicago and Boston and whatever, but still, there's nothing much out there on the radio at night to listen to, except the successor to Howard Bell. And my God, I'm beginning
to... Oh, George Norrie?
Yeah. Am I crazy or are they crazy?
Well, I'm gonna refuse to answer on the ground that it might tend to intimidate me.
And yeah, well, there's a guy who just wrote a book that Hitler survived and flew out of Berlin to Portugal, sailed underwater to Argentina, and lived out his days in Argentina. And this guy that wrote the book, damn it, I wish I could remember his name. He's real popular with the right wing. He's written several things in recent years that are to the right of reality, you know. When the guy's talking about his book, I'm sitting here going, well, Jesus Christ, really? I haven't seen the Nazi Party make a huge comeback in Europe, have you?
It's on its way back in various forms. You got Nazis in Ukraine. You've got a small but noisy and viable group of people who don't call themselves Nazis but are in Germany. You've got a strong right wing ultra nationalist fascist presence in Norway. They're in France. They are damn sure in Greece.
Well, there has been a right wing.
Probably they're in Italy. I mean, after all, it's the birthplace of fascism.
Yeah, there are plenty of people who still think that way. That's what's so scary. No matter what beats their heads in, they keep coming back to the same old crap. Just they don't know what else to do, so they believe in this. I guess it's me, Bob. I never wanted to give up authority to a lot of people in my life, and that's been a weakness maybe with me, but I'll be damned if I'm going to walk around Sieg Heiling some moron. Oh, you, I don't know if you remember George Lincoln Rockwell or not. You know,
oh, American Nazi Party?
Yeah. Well, you know, his father was a comic named Doc Rockwell.
Didn't know that.
Check him out. I think he was working around Fred Allen. He did, like, what do they call malapropisms? That was one of his standard ways of getting a laugh.
Oh, really?
I looked at him. Yeah, I saw a picture of those guys in a magazine, Life or Look. I took one look at him and says, look at this bunch of slobs. These were the Nazi sergeant and army to walk, like, down a row of them, giving them the old Three Stooges slap as he walked past them, you know? Because this was the sloppiest bunch of morons I've ever seen in my life. We're supposed to take this seriously? Yeah, check Doc Rockwell, too. He was very well known in what he did, and I'm trying to remember maybe whether he worked with Fred Allen, because there were so many radio comics and such in my youth that I can't remember them all, you know? I'm not that good. I never was. Anyway, you take care of yourself, but man, oh, man, it's just you. When this guy frees and these guys start running their mouths, what in the hell do they want? They want it all.
There we go. You answered your own question. They want it all. Because money.
People. Yeah. I always say the same thing. How much, man, you give me, if I hit the lottery for $1 million, you know, which one time my wife and I missed the super by one two-digit number, so. So, in all honesty, if I ever came into that kind of money, you wouldn't hear me bitching about anything. I'd be off somewhere just relaxing, but with my luck, I'd get some kind of a notice nobody ever heard of yet, you know. Any old sarcastic way of looking at life. Anyway, hang in there.
I'm going to try. You do the same, Bill, and we will talk soon.
Take care.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. You know, over the time that we've been talking, I have learned so much from Mr. Stress. He is encyclopedic in his knowledge of well, the world in which he thrived. And that's why, because when I was watching, and, you know, it's not a bad movie, it's just not a good movie on the road. Walter Salles is the guy who directed The Motorcycle Diaries, and you can see that, and that was a brilliant film, and you can see the style of it all over on the road. I didn't get the guy that they cast in the Kerouac role. I just didn't. But I tell you what, you want to talk about a brilliant performance. It's short, but it is, I mean, brilliant. Is Viggo Mortensen, you know, Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. Viggo Mortensen playing William S. Burroughs, who in On the Road is known as Old Bull Lee. He looks like him. He sounds like him. The scenes of him there at the house in Louisiana, walking around with a shoulder holster and a revolver. In a way, if you familiarize yourself with the writings of William S. Burroughs, what you see is the nascent beginnings of where Hunter S. Thompson would take the so-called new journalism. But Viggo Mortensen and Amy Adams as Jane, who Burroughs would go on to shoot in the head in Mexico, they were just brilliant portrayals. Absolutely brilliant. Just a short time on screen, but wow. I didn't know Viggo Mortensen had that kind of range. But when I saw what's his name, Garrett Hedlund, something like that, smashing those inhalers, I thought of the stories that Bill had told in the past. About 17 minutes before the hour, we have $20 to go to meet Darlene's Double Your Money challenge for this Titanic Tuesday. Thanks very much to Jim and to Sal and to Dan for answering that challenge thus far. We need two more folks at $10, four at $5, one at $20 in order to secure the Double Your Money challenge. And by the way, Randy reminds me that I should probably give out the traditional mail address. It's there at the website, headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute. But it is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower, like the president, because that's who it's named for, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And just a gentle reminder, like I told Jim, don't make checks or money orders out to Bob Kincaid. I don't see it. It's how we pay the bills. And Boss Man Wayne handles all of that and makes sure that, well, the bill paying gets done. So, just to wrap things up, because it's Titanic Tuesday, and because this is just too damn good. It was apparently a rough day, or not so rough. I mean, it's kind of like the cobra who plays with the mouse before giving the mouse what for. The House Judiciary Committee today had a hearing to which they invited Attorney General Eric Holder. And while I do have issues with Attorney General Holder, I have to say there's just something in this that makes you root for him. He didn't just get grilled by a wingnut. He also got grilled, this individual wasn't being mean about it. We'll start here. One of my favorite members of Congress is Steve Cohen from Tennessee. He's also signatory to the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. And he's liberal, progressive. The people in the district which he represents are, in my opinion, fortunate to have him. Now, listen to this clip of Representative Cohen querying Attorney General Holder at the hearing today, and then sort of file it away, because after that, we're going to compare it with the qualities of an interrogation by a member of the looniest of the teabagging lunatic, birther, bircher, deather, tenther, booger-eater, igum-foo, pig-licking, libertarian, whatever, right-wing in this country. This is Steve Cohen talking to Attorney General Holder about a topic that actually matters.
I appreciate what you've done, and some of the statements you've made have been most forward move me, and I've appreciated them. But you recently talked about changing marijuana from Schedule 1 and said you'd work with Congress and Congress should take the lead. Let me suggest to you that it's my understanding under Title 21 that you have the authority to initiate a request to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to do a study to look into marijuana in Schedule 1 and that you could then change it. In my humble opinion, and I think the majority of people in this country, there's no way that marijuana should be Schedule 1 because it's not in the same class as heroin and LSD as it is in the code, which breeds contempt for our laws.
Now, hold on. Do you hear the cogent argument that Steve Cohen is making? Do you realize what a sort of groundbreaking moment this is? This is a sitting member of Congress telling the Attorney General of the United States that it's time for the Department of Justice to get real about the cannabis prohibition. Lord God, how many members of Congress over how many years, how many decades have taken to committee hearing or the floor of the House to talk about the demon doobie? And in 2014, Steve Cohen, a Democrat from Tennessee, says it's time to take cannabis off of Schedule 1, because Schedule 1 in the U.S. Code means that the cannabis is the same as heroin and acid and cocaine and meth, et cetera, et cetera, and that it has no medicinal value whatsoever. And because it's on Schedule 1, it means that it cannot even be studied. So let's go back to Representative Cohen.
And there's certainly medical bases. Dr. Sanjay Gupta has shown this in his broadcasting, but people have voted it in 20 states for multiple sclerosis, for children with epilepsy and seizures, and it has medical benefit. And to be Schedule 1, it says it has no medical benefit. Well, that's just fallacious. And the fact that this is a high ability or likelihood of abuse, it's nothing like heroin. That's absurd. So I would like to ask you, why will you not act as the president suggested, that where Congress won't, and I predict Congress will not act in this area, because Congress is generally like tortoises, and until it's really clear, they're not going to put their head out there. But the administration has acted on immigration, acted on environmental policy, acting in wages and minimum wages, et cetera. Why won't the administration act with the pen and the phone to help people out with taking this out of Schedule 1 so it can be studied, because we're all in favor of research?
Well, I think that we actually have acted in a responsible way in how we've made the determination how we're going to use our limited resources, the policies that I've announced as part of the Smart on Crime initiative, the directions that I've given to people in the field, I think reflect a a sensitivity to, again, the resource restraints that we have, the division between federal and local law enforcement responsibilities, and I think that we have acted appropriately.
In those areas, you certainly have, but for Schedule 1, all you have to do is to ask the secretary to make a scientific and medical evaluation, and after that, then you can go further and make a determination on whether it should be Schedule 1. Schedule 1 says you can't do any research on it. Why will you not ask the secretary under Title 21, Chapter 13, to initiate that program to get marijuana out of Schedule 1? It's obviously not Schedule 1.
Well, what's obvious to one is perhaps not obvious to another. I think, as I said, that given the responsibilities that I have...
Well, let me ask you...
Now, hold on a minute. Schedule 1, as noted, means that it has no redeeming social or pharmaceutical or scientific value at all, and that no one should ever do research on it. And the Attorney General of the United States says what's obvious to one isn't obvious to another? What do you say to cancer patients who get relief? What do you say to people with chronic pain conditions who get real-time relief from cannabis? And what's not obvious to others? Who are we talking about, Mr. Attorney General? Are we talking about the weirdo right wing? Or are we talking about the member of Congress or what? Maybe, yeah, the cop in Annapolis who cited an article from The Onion about 126 overdose deaths in Colorado on the first day of legalization? Is that what we're talking about? Is that the what's not obvious to others part? Or is it the people who have government jobs with the DEA who might find themselves out of one if we end one of the stupidest present prohibition that this government maintains? Did the Attorney General of the United States just take up for the weirdo know-nothings of the right wing? Really?
See, the secretary would make that study to determine it. Why not initiate the opportunity for the secretary to make the study and base it on science? And until you do that, it's not going to happen.
Well, as I said, within the world in which I have primary responsibility, I think we have acted in a way that is appropriate.
In those areas you have, the Attorney General shall, before initiating proceedings under subsection A, to on control to remove a drug or other substance entirely, shall request from the Secretary a scientific and medical evaluation. That's all you have to do is request it. That doesn't take away from your limited resources.
No, it doesn't, Congressman Cohen. But, oh my God, the hissy. Because this is an administration that often operates from a position of fear, and you know, if you liked IRS and you liked Benghazi, just oh my God, there will be, and this is reality, there will be House of Representatives impeachment hearings against Eric Holder if he does that. But at some point in time, I can't help but think that there's a little bit of courage called for. Now, we are rapidly running out of time, and I don't want to miss this. So that's what it sounds like when an intelligent member of Congress queries the Attorney General. Enter Louis Crablegs Gohmert, proud representative of the 1st Congressional District of Texas Stan. Holy cats. These two are beginning to have a history, Gohmert and Holder. And, well, get the popcorn.
The promise to do is to provide you and your staff with...
Sir, I've read you what your department promised, and it is inadequate, and I realize that contempt is not a big deal to our Attorney General, but it is important that we have proper oversight.
You don't want
to go
there, buddy.
So,
you don't want to go there, okay?
I don't want to go there?
No.
About the contempt?
You should not assume... That is not a big deal to me. I think that it was inappropriate. I think it was unjust. But never think that that was not a big deal to me. Don't ever think that.
Well,
At this point in time, because there's video involved, I can tell you that the Attorney General of the United States is shaking his finger at quite possibly the most ignorant, most manifestly stupid member of the House of Representatives, maybe in United States history, Louis Gohmert. Don't go there, buddy. You don't want to go there, buddy. Wow.
I'm just looking for evidence, and normally we're known by our fruits, and there have been no indications that it was a big deal because your department has still not been forthcoming in producing the documents that were the subject of the contempt.
And the contempt being Fast and Furious, which was, of course, initiated, let's all remember, by the Bush administration. But who's counting? And finally, as we run up on the end of the program, this. At which, after all this nastiness and being told that, well, you know, contempt is no big deal to you, Louis Gohmert, having first had his ass handed to him once, then puts the ball back in play and gets it handed to him again. You'll have to struggle to hear this, but this is one for the ages. It's right up there with NAACP national champions.
Do you think someone who believes marriage is between a man and a woman violates the civil rights of a same-sex couple?
Somebody's personal belief?
Yes. No. How about if they have a business and they believe that?
If they have a business? If
it's a...
I love how Holder makes it clear that Gohmert is beneath his contempt and listens to him and spits his words back at him as if Looney Louie is speaking the language of the toe-brained people of Norblap 9. It's beautiful.
If it's a private business and the owners of the private business believe marriage is between a man and a woman, are they violating a same-sex couple's civil rights, in your opinion?
Well, that's obviously a matter that is under consideration by the courts, and we have taken a position on that. I wouldn't want to get into something that is a pending matter.
Well, it is your opinion that matters on whether you tell attorneys general how to act in the states or how you approach businesses or individuals that have this biblical view that the president had when he was a senator in 2008, so I thought it was rather important. Well, let me ask you.
The time of the gentleman has expired.
Okay, wait for this.
Chair recognizes the gentleman.
Asparagus.
Oh! Did you get that? The time from the gentleman is time of the gentleman has expired. Huh, that's too bad. At which point, the Attorney General of the United States looks at Louis Gohmert and says, good luck with your asparagus. Okay, I'm simple. Sometimes I just like to see a little bit of a smackdown. Yeah. So it's time to get out of here in a hurry. Looks like we're going to close the program $20 short of meeting Darlene's challenge. Here's hoping that will happen in short order, and then I will let Darlene know once it has, and your money will have been doubled. Thank you very much, Darlene. Thank you to Dan, to Sal, and to Jim for thus far helping us meet that challenge. Thanks to everybody who makes this program go. We are right out of time. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn. Good night, y'all. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow.